Missy Kai is the founder of The Body Intuitive, a holistic therapy company that helps active professionals with chronic pain, injuries, and trauma. She has over 2,500 hours of training, 5 certifications, 8 years of teaching, and 12 years of practice experience in different modalities such as rehabilitative mobility, therapeutic body work, clinical yoga therapy, and sovereign sexuality coaching. When not working, Missy enjoys music, dining, and traveling to see friends. In this episode, she hopes you'll take away these core messages. One, that most modern westernized medicine is sick care and not truly healthcare, and typically neglects to incorporate a managed care and preventative approach. And also that when people do encounter chronic illness, they tend to get stuck in what she calls passive purgatory, and they don't receive clear guidance or instructions or tools on how to transition themselves. That's why she uses an integrated perspective that's also grounded in evidence-based practices. The Chronic Illness Therapist podcast is meant to be a place where people with chronic illnesses can come to feel heard, seen, and safe while listening to mental health therapists and other medical professionals talk about the realities of treating difficult conditions. This might be a new concept for you, one in which you never have to worry about someone inferring that it's all in your head. We dive deep into the human side of treating complex medical conditions and help you find professionals that leave you feeling hopeful for the future. I hope you love what you learn here, and please consider leaving a review or sharing this podcast with someone you love. This podcast is meant for educational purposes only. For specific questions related to your unique circumstances, please contact a licensed medical professional in your state of residence. Why don't we get started by you telling a little bit about where you practice and what you do and how you got here too? What's maybe a little bit of your story?
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on, and I was so excited to speak with you because you know, chronic illness and therapy is something that's both very personally related to me, and so my professional career is very much an outgrowth of my own journey and experiences. So I'll kind of weave all of that together here for you and try to summarize what is could be a long story. So basically, when I was 13, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder called ulcerative colitis. It's an autoimmune digestive disorder. And so that basically set me off on this journey of, you know, relating to my body differently and trying to understand how it works, and that frustration of navigating the web of different doctor's appointments and, you know, conflicting viewpoints. And, you know, of course, being a teenager too, it's not even like I had, you know, domain or sovereignty over my own health decisions entirely at that point either. So it was just a really confusing landscape to navigate. And so, you know, through more holistic practices and lifestyle changes that I discovered through a therapeutic application of yoga. So, you know, a lot of people are familiar with more like power flow or hot yoga, vinyasa. And, you know, you and I had talked about this a little bit where, you know, yoga is made for every body, but, you know, each body needs something different from yoga. So yoga has always had a very therapeutic intention for me. And I was just somebody that really needed an outlet. So something that was, you know, a need became, you know, curiosity, became a passion, became a whole career for me. So in that process, you know, I took my 200 hour. I, you know, went to yoga therapy training at Loyola Marymount, which is, I believe, the first university accredited yoga therapy program. So a lot of the professors there during that time are kind of like grandfathers in this field. Yoga therapy is a separate field from yoga, even as an institution, as a credentialed profession. And it takes the practice of yoga and applies it as a therapeutic practice individually for a variety of psychosomatic or mind-body disorders. So we're using it as an integrative medicine and working with a practice up to a clinic, you know, for a clinical point and application for specific needs. So when I first got into this, it was like something I needed for myself. So that's the direction I thought I would go with it. But then my practice went a completely different direction once I actually started working with clients and seeing where the need was. So we can get into some of that today. But again, I'm trying to keep this as brief as possible. But nowadays, I'm practicing in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I also have clients a lot on the West Coast and remotely all around the country. I practice as a holistic somatic therapist, and my main modalities include, as mentioned, clinical yoga therapy. I'm also a certified functional mobility rehabilitation specialist. So, you know, injuries, chronic pain, the type of things that your crowd is working with. And I'm also a trauma-informed body worker and licensed massage therapist in several states. And currently I'm working towards national certification with that as well. So I can do body work for people in other states too. So, so it's been a long process. Anyway, thank you for having me on here.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's all so interesting. And I hope my audience finds it as interesting as I knew, because the yoga therapy piece, I know we did talk about that before in our pre-interview. And yeah, like I didn't know. I mean, I knew that, you know, yoga could look a million different ways, but didn't realize that there was a real, like a medicinal component. It feels like when people are talking about yoga for chronic pain or for whatever, it feels like they don't quite have the training that's really necessary for that. And so hearing your training and your background felt a lot different, a lot more grounding, because it just, yeah, you were telling me like it's even like 1,000 hours and or maybe more.
Yeah, so you know, it may have changed since I graduated, and I know that. Okay, so just for your listeners, I'll do a quick breakdown of the differences, major differences between yoga and yoga therapy. And I want to preface this breakdown by saying I completely understand that yoga is often peddled as like a panacea for a bunch of different things. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about that, because I know and have experienced the benefits of the practice. And yet I also totally understand if something's kind of shoved down your throat, it's like, oh, this should be good for you, but then it doesn't work for you. It's not being offered to you in a way that can actually genuinely meet your needs. And that can be feel really frustrating and, you know, maybe elicit feelings of shamefulness or embarrassment or anything like that. And I actually work with the mostly male population. I mean, I welcome all genders into my practice, but, you know, they have a lot of different hangups than a woman might in approaching something like a yoga practice, even to begin with. So I want to dispel some of those myths like right away. So in the breakdown of yoga versus yoga therapy, one of the first and main ones is the certification process. So the 200 hour that you see in the yoga world is the very basis and the prerequisite for entering a clinical yoga therapy program. So you already have to have that, or you'll get it along the way of being in your 1,000 hour yoga therapy program. I think they might have increased the hours to 100 or 1,100. Anyway, so that's just the starting point, right? That 200 hour training. So most teachers in that 200 hour are really going for choreography, for vinyasa, flow, focus, learning how to sequence different postures. You'll learn probably a good overview of the basics, you know, the yamas and niyamas, which is like kind of the 10 commandments of yoga philosophy, essentially, those types of things, right? You'll have a good sound grip on all of that, but it doesn't necessarily certify you or give you the tools needed to work with somebody therapeutically. Like yoga, there's a difference between yoga having a therapeutic effect or beneficial effect and actually using it as an applied therapy. So for that, you're right, you do need a lot more training. And so there's a lot of kind of grit your teeth moments in this industry where you're like, okay, you know, let's be precise about the things that we're claiming, and let's be accurate about how we can apply certain tools, and honestly comprehensive in our understanding of them and the ways that we can work with the individual. Yoga therapy very, very much emphasizes adapting the practices for the person. So there's really no cookie cutter approach here. So that being said, within the bigger realm of yoga, there's many, many lineages. There's Bikram, there's Anusara, there's Ashtanga, there's, I could go on for Iyengar, you know, just pick your guru, right? yoga therapy also has a lineage. It's called yoga chikitsa in India, but it's inextricably interwoven and tied with its sister science called Ayurveda, which is the Indian system of medicine. So it takes Ayurveda and the yoga philosophies and practices and approaches, including asana poses, breath work, pranayama, and mindfulness practices, meditation, withdrawing of the senses, observing the self, self-inquiry, a lot of the things that you would go over in therapy, right? So it involves all of those layers together and then distills it down to practice for that person. So it works in a holistic, integrative way where we need to learn a lot more about the person that we're working with up front in order to appropriately tailor and specify what their practices are. And even within that, you know, we're trained that certain practices have a general effect, but there's nuances and contraindications that you also need to be aware of for different types of disorders or imbalances that present in the soma or the body, so that you're making sure that the practices are landing in the proper way. So I don't claim to be a mental health therapist. I don't claim to be a doctor. I think it's very important that we stay within the scope of our practices, but and at the same time, it's like we also have to know enough to be able to speak to the doctors, be able to speak to the, you know, holistic side of things and interweave it together. So what I tell my clients is that it's a very managed care approach that we take. And my personal philosophy is that I'm not eschewing or poo-pooing any side, either the, you know, the medicinal or the holistic. What we're aiming to do is integrate those together and simplify that and distill it down into exactly what the client needs to tie all of it together in a more holistic way instead of a very bits and pieces kind of way that Western medicine often does. So so the 200 hours is the start. The certifying bodies are even different from each other. There's the Yoga Alliance that does all the yoga certifications, and there's the IAYT, the International Association of Yoga Therapists, that is a certifying and governing body for the international yoga certification. So they're going through a lot of changes right now. They're even introducing like a professional licensing exam and like all of that stuff. They're really trying to build the credibility of the profession.
Yeah, well, you're doing a good job advocating for them because everything sounds wonderful. What are some of the like main tenets of your work, whether that's philosophical tenets or mechanical tenets? You can kind of choose where you want to go with that question, but just kind of curious about some of the pillars.
Thanks. I think it's a great question. So my practice is not just yoga therapy. I have more trainings than that. So with my individual practice, I can speak to that. You know, similarly, like doctors or dancers or martial artists, there's different kinds of yoga therapists, right? So my specialty is within the realm of chronic pain, trauma, injury rehabilitation, or some combination thereof. I also offer intimacy coaching too, because I found a lot of times as clients would get comfortable with me, they would start opening up about, you know, that realm of their life. And at first I saw them as very separate, but now that I've been working with it for a while, I see them as very related to each other because, you know, our intimacy and sexuality is very closely tied to how we relate to our bodies and express ourselves through our bodies and have feedback with our bodies. What is the relationship to that? And that's very much at the core of what I teach, which I have dubbed quote unquote personalized practice. So that's my whole main pillar. That's my whole shtick, my whole jam, which is, you know, make the practice work for the person, not the other way around. So we've taken a whole long loop around to what I was saying earlier, that we want to put the individual at the center of their treatment and emphasize the wholeness of the self and give the person the proper tools at the proper time in the proper dosage, just like a medicine would, to implement the kinds of changes that we want to affect in their life. And so in my realm, which is again, chronic pain, trauma, injuries, usually we start at the Anumaya Kosha, which is the physical body layer. That being said, that's usually what brings people in. It's easy to get you know, it's easier to think about a physical kind of pain, like, oh, the shoulder hurts, or I have a back pain. It's almost more socially accepted to have those kinds of pains where you can see it, right? It's harder for us as a culture and a society to accept pains that aren't visible, right? Or impact us in invisible ways, right? So what I've often found is that if we do not address the other layers of being, which include the mind, the subtle body energy of the breath, and even, you know, the layer of, you know, our wisdom body, our personality, the way that we respond and react to things, how our nervous system is wired, then those samskaras, the Sanskrit word for patterns, apologies, we hear my gardener in the background. the samskaras will continue to repeat themselves. The patterns continue to repeat themselves. And so a lot of clients will come to me when they've seen, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 other providers haven't gotten better. And a lot of times that missing piece is that we haven't sufficiently or completely addressed the emotional and psychological component of what their pain or pain story is or their trauma story is. So I don't even need to know what the story is necessarily to be able to work with that. What we need to focus on is how do we interconnect and interweave all these layers together and get that to soften enough for the possibility and opening of working with the physical body. And for people who have had trauma, there's a lot that can come up there. You know, there's a lot of subtle nuances. And so that's why we go through this really thorough process of an intake. And I really try to get to know all aspects of this person, their diet, their sleep, their lifestyle, their relationships, their support system, their physical practices, their hobbies, because that way we can link their personalized practice to what's important to them in their life and make it meaningful for them and create a practice that's personalized to be contained within their life. Otherwise, they're just not going to do it. And it doesn't matter how good the technique is if you just never do it at all, right? So that's my whole spiel and shtick is to get people doing their own practices. And it's really, really hard to be consistent and accountable with yourself compared to going to a yoga class and somebody else telling you what to do. But that's where the gold mine comes in with this type of work, is that you have ownership over that. You always carry it with you. Nobody can take that away from you, whether the studio is closed or your therapist can't see you or anything like that. You have those tools with you everywhere you go. So the point of all this is really just self-mastery, right? So you can live and enjoy your life and just do the things that you want to do, right? Not have the same need in your joy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I know you have your ebook, which is a little like free thing for people to sign up for. And in your kind of 5 steps, I think the one that sticks out for me is adapting your practice. You know, you can probably go over some of what's in there, but adapt, you know, when you talk about adapting your practice, I mean, that's a piece that a lot of practitioners of all different kinds, therapists, doctors, chiropractors, massage therapists, like we learn these techniques and are told like this is supposed to work, but it doesn't adapt to the person. There's so much more that goes into making a flexible and personalized program. So yeah, do you have anything that you'd like to share either about that or about personalized practice?
Yeah, 100%. Thank you for asking. Great question. So I like sharing this ebook because to get your personalized practice started, to do something consistently for yourself, you know, there's tons of programs out there for you to explore. You don't necessarily have to take mine. But what I found in, you know, my 8 years of doing this is that a lot of times people don't have the foundational steps in place to start this journey off. And then they get frustrated and it self-perpetuates this downward shame guilt spiral, which is exactly the point of what we're trying to get them out of, especially if they have trauma or injuries, right? Because it's already a difficult situation to deal with. So by breaking things down into smaller steps and even just acknowledging that there's a process to starting the process, I always think starting is half the battle. So if you could just get yourself started, then we can get into all the fun stuff of like, okay, what do I practice? Is breath work better for me today? Is movement better for me today? I mean, there's so many different directions you can go. I don't really care what technique you use as long as it works for you and it accomplishes the said purpose, right? That's what we want at the end of the day. So however that can fit into your lifestyle. So I just want to get people started with that. I find that the biggest challenge that people have in approaching something like this conceptually is like, oh, I don't have the time. I can't schedule it out. You know, I'm not excited about this. It's not working for me. So I think that's what you're speaking to. And you're like, how do I adapt this practice for myself? In Ayurveda, we speak to the different life cycles and how they affect our energy. So we speak to those at a microcosmic level. You can even look at it over the course of a day or a week, you know, like some smaller contained unit. And we also speak to Ritucharya, which is the seasonal cycles of life. So, you know, there's the seasons of Earth. There's also, you know, the geography where you live. There's also the seasonal cycles of life, different chapters of life that you go through. And so your practice may need to shift during those seasonal cycles. So the structure that we're creating here is that there's always a practice for you to come home to yourself, and that there's always a tool or technique for you to help you experience psychosomatically in a felt sense that balance and that inner centeredness that we're seeking, right? And to hold yourself in that way, basically to help yourself regulate yourself. That's where the self-mastery comes in. You know, that being said, yoga doesn't take away the hardships of life, but it does give us tools to be able to cope with them. I don't think that yoga is the answer, you know, the hardcore individualist ruggedness of just pick yourself up by your bootstraps. But it's just, you know, if there is room and space for us to affect a better outcome within ourselves, or even just shift how we feel in relationship to ourselves and building that inner resilience of like, no, I can face this, and I do have these practices to hold me in this process. That's the structure that we're implementing here. The exact way that it looks is going to be completely unique to you, completely different to whatever's going on in your life. And so that's the flexibility. So structure and flexibility, discipline, and surrender is where you get flow, right? And flow is what we talk about as a yogic or blissful state. You're just so in the moment that you're completely present. Things are moving. It feels like there's a lack of resistance impeding you in your life. And that state is very healing for our nervous system. It's very healing for our bodies. And there's a lot of different ways people can access that state. Practice is where we can allow ourselves to either rest into that nourishment deeply and receive that, or stimulate our bodies in a way where we can build strength and resilience to face whatever challenges that we're coping with. So we may need to modulate that practice according to what's going on each day, each week, each month. So I try to get my clients to structure it out week by week and month by month. I say, okay, 3 months is probably the longest we can think about a container of completing an action, right? So we have our bigger goal. Let's break that down into 3 monthly cycles. Each month is about 4 weekly cycles of practice. If you can do 2 to 3 days a week, about 10 to 20 minutes, it's about an hour a whole week of practice, you will see an effect. Now, you can always do more, but when we're already taxed, the nervous system is simple is enough, right? Do the 1 or 2 things. That's it. Because as soon as we blow that, the whole structure is blown. And then again, we go into this self-shame cycle. I really try to avoid an aversive relationship to practice with my students. We want to have practice be a safe harbor, a safe space to come back to any time you need. We need to set it up in a way that works for them, which is a whole art in science, which is, you know, what my clients come to see me with. But if I could just drill it down to the essence of, you know, make sure you have the equipment you need, get your space set up, look at your calendar, section out a time that you think is going to work for you. And it's usually when you need time to yourself the most in the day. If it's transitioning from work, great. If it's first thing in the morning, great. But it doesn't have to be. I think a lot of people guilt themselves of like, oh, I don't get up in the morning and do an hour of vinyasa flow. It doesn't have to look like that at all. You know, then move it around in a way that works for you, but don't give up while coming back to the practice. It's really just returning home to yourself over and over and over again. Rinse and repeat until you die. That makes it like, that's it. That's the whole game.
That's the honest truth of it. Yes. And I think that can be a huge hang up for people. This is what I'm supposed to, like, this is it. Like, what do I do next? There's always something more we want to look to. And so, yeah, I'm curious, like, even if you know, do your clients kind of start off with like, I need skills, I need this, like, I need that. And then you have to do a lot of education around what you just talked to us about, or what does that usually look like for you?
Yeah, I work with a lot of, you know, busy, successful professionals. A lot of them are very heady and analytical. And honestly, I enjoy working with complex cases. I usually get a lot of complex and severe cases. So they'll come in and say things like, oh, I hate routines, which is great because the whole point of this is they need to be doing a routine consistently. And, you know, they've seen other people and they've been told that they're never going to get better. And this is just the way that it is now forever. And, you know, that's a lot to overcome. That's a lot of resistance, a lot of density, right? And so that's why I like to use the body work initially in my work with people, because everybody feels that for the most part, people feel that massage is something that's nice and they can feel both the physical and energetic release. If we don't have the opportunity to do the body work, I think the best thing to overcome that resistance is giving the person choices and saying, I understand that, you know, routines and the way that you've been offered them in the past haven't worked for you. So I'm curious what hasn't worked for you about it. And we're actually going to take those things as information to formulate something that will work for you, right? Because I don't believe in pushing to get ourselves to try to do something. And oftentimes that's what led to the injury in the first place, where there's this sense of, I don't do more, I'm not doing enough in myself to make this work. And since it's not working anyway, I just get frustrated. So I'm going to give up. Who wouldn't feel that way? So I think, you know, just validating their feelings and really meeting the person where they're at and being like, okay, well, what does feel good to do? Oh, well, I think I like that breathing technique. Okay, we'll just take 5 deep breaths in the morning. We'll start there. You know, it doesn't have to be rainbows and unicorns and all of a sudden you're, you know, going off to Peru or India or something. Just to like do your practices. Literally, the point of all of this is for you to be engaged in your everyday life. So we're essentially preparing the mind and the body. And so I think if we reframe that a little bit and say, hey, this is something that you get to choose and you get to feel good about, that is even in itself just a whole shift for the client. And they're like, okay, this is something I get to do. And in fact, if I don't do these things, then I'm actually going to hurt more at the end of the day. And knowing that is not always necessarily enough. And so we recognize that willpower is not something that is reliable for the practice like this, that we need to be consistent. So that's why we implement other support structures, such as weekly sessions, such as building a support community around them, such as, you know, building in those therapeutic elements of that relationship. So that way it's like, oh, I am keeping my promises to myself in a way. And that also is healing for those who are suffering chronic pain because it restores that sense of trust within themselves that, oh, I see that a different experience is possible for me. And there's a reclaiming of power in their lives and control over their lives in that. And I think that's what a lot of, you know, chronic illness is. It's like a loss of control over your life. This thing just kind of comes in and takes it over. And it's really, really overwhelming and frustrating. So you know, just assuring them that this is a safe outlet. You get to choose this and it's something that can feel good for you, but it does require your commitment. So that's just part of the process, you know, when it takes a little time sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's the big piece, the commitment piece. I think there is a lot of shame that happens there because most of us were not raised in a way that said, here's what we need to commit to, and I'm going to help you and hold your hand until you figure out how to do it for yourself. Most of us are told, like, I told you 5 times already. Why can't you do it by now? So that's the message, I think, that it sounds like you're really helping people shift. And that is how I view my role as well, is just I'm here to hold your hand until you feel you don't need it anymore. And
Yes, I have the, this is, my, I build my life on this too, right? So I, you know, we have the education, we have the background, we have the knowledge, but it's not really about the things that I know. And that, I think is a helpful, and you want that in your mentor or in your person that you're trusting to share information with you. You know, we have to know what we're talking about in that sense, but it's not really about the specific knowledge. It's about the, it's about the handholding.
Yes. Oftentimes the therapeutic relationship or the coaching relationship is what facilitates the shift. And I don't think people should shame themselves for not being able to self-soothe or self-regulate out of that, especially if there's pain or trauma, especially in a chronic sense too. There's some cycle or pattern, again, the Sanskrit word is samskara, that's being unseen or unmet or unwitnessed. And if the need goes unmet for a long time, like, we can't negotiate away our needs just are. And so there's a contention in this process with what is and a grappling with what our needs are to take care of ourselves in the way that we uniquely benefit from and will thrive in. And that's a lot of self-responsibility. We may have not been modeled or taught self-responsibility in that sense. But again, I also think it's very human to go through phases and cycles with practice. Just as the earth goes through phases and cycles too, we may have, you know, points of being very intensely engaged with practice and points of being very disinterested in practice. Those points are natural fluctuations, and still the practice is just returning home over and over and over again and asking yourself, what do I need? What is my truth here? What is my body asking of me? And over time, we develop a relationship with ourselves to where we're more sensitive to that. A lot of practice is a resensitization. Trauma is too much, too fast, to the point where it breaks and damages. And the healing from that is the resensitization and the wearing away of numbness, so to speak. It's the recoloring of our worlds here. And so that can feel even scary to approach at first. So I say just titrate, you know, take it off in little pieces and bits. And so slower, consistent steps are better than big everything all at once and then nothing at all. Big all at once, nothing at all. We want to start to smooth out those cycles over time. That being said, adapt your practice, let it flow with your stages of life. Like, if you're not able to commit to this, let's find something that you can work with. So I never shame people for not doing their practices. I just encourage my students to be honest with me and say, hey, that's interesting. Just curious, why was that? Why didn't you meet your practice goals this week? Oh, well, there is this going on or this going on. Be like, wait a second. You took 10 deep breaths in that moment where otherwise you would have flown off the handle before. That's practice. You know, like, that is really this in action, you know? So the whole, again, the whole point is just to be able to go live your life and do the things you enjoy and nurture, you know, deep fulfilling relationships and things that you enjoy. So anyway, I don't want to model forever, but I appreciate it.
No, that's great. I'm curious, you know, I work a lot with women and cycles. And so of course menstruation comes up a lot, but you work a lot with men. And so I'm curious, are there any cycles that are specific to men that you would talk more with them about?
Oh gosh, yeah. So I work with a lot of men kind of like in their middle ages of life, the middle stages of life. So what I see come up a lot is so many things. I have a great presentation on YouTube about healing the male trauma cycle, because the way that men cope with trauma is different than the way that women do, and so it will present in different ways. So a lot of times things like you know, substance abuse or difficulties and intimacy might come up, or there's this general feeling of like, oh, I'm getting older, and a grappling with the aging process, not wanting to get older or wanting to still feel young as long as possible. But then, you know, the injuries and mobility, the aches and pains start to come in, and they're like, okay, I'm not invincible anymore. I'm not 22 anymore. Right. So, you know, and, you know, there's many aspects of life that this bleeds into. So it also impacts their career, how they're able to show up at work. It also impacts their self-image and their confidence in terms of dating and intimacy, depending on the stage of life that they're in with relationship. So I always tell them, you know, I know this is hard work for you to do. I think it's really courageous for you to even be here in the first place, because you're raising your hand and saying, you know, I need help with something. And oftentimes even that is too vulnerable for the guys, right? To say, you know, because needing help or vulnerability can be seen as weakness. And it's often true. So even for them to get to that point in the first place, I think is really brave. So I just try to be really grounded and practical in the way that I approach my work with them and just say, here's how this is going to benefit you. Here's the, you know, the couple things that I need you to do, and let's do it in a way that feels good to you and fits within your lifestyle. And actually what I've found is, even though the guys are, you know, tend to be a little bit more resistant at first, they, after that 2 or 3 month initial hump period of working with them, will stick with this for years. You know, they'll be some of the best practitioners and they'll do their practices for like 5-10 years consistently. You know, it's just like, it's like that old guy running a marathon. He's just placing one foot in front of the other, right? So he eventually gets there. It's really beautiful. Yeah. It's like, when they become leaders of their communities, they're a lot more in touch with themselves and their bodies. They're able to share and articulate these concepts to other people, or they encourage other men in their community to, you know, approach these kinds of practices or reframe their thinking. But it's not like me telling them, you need to think this way, or you need to change yourself this way. It's a process they go through themselves and say, okay, here's how I can make myself better. And now I'm better for my community, whether that's, you know, at work, you know, in my intimate life, or even just with my friendships, they're able to access a lot more and hold themselves better, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you're really speaking to values work, what's important to you and why is it important. And we use that as the foundation to decide what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And then we commit to ourselves, and then we work on the shame that comes up when we drop that commitment and all of that. So yeah, it's really a holistic practice in all senses of that word.
Absolutely. What we're looking to give back here is a sense of wholeness, a sense of empowerment, and a sense of healing. Really, like you said, there's lots of ways we can get there, but it's not always about the modality itself.
Yeah. And we haven't talked too much about specifically like the pain or the illness piece, and that's because this really is about the foundation, and you have to start there before you try to dig into specifics about this problem or that problem. But do you have any examples about that are more specific, that are concrete and tangible for people to take away regarding like chronic pain and illness? And I know that's a vague, broad question. So.
Absolutely. I'd love to share. One of my most recent examples is with a female client in her 50s, who was referred to me, and she had a very severe case of fibromyalgia. And so, you know, that is one of many things that I work with. For example, people will see me for shoulder injuries, for, you know, sexual abuse trauma, for immobility in their hips. You know, there's just a whole broad spectrum. So this particular client came to me for fibromyalgia. She wasn't able to have more than one good week a month where she was able to be active. The rest of the month, she was literally laying on her couch for most of the day in pain, not really able to move a lot. She had been through quite a lot in raising her children. And so I think over time that impacted her body, where, you know, again, it was a form of trauma where it was too much too fast. And so for my lens, it was the fibromyalgia was an expression of the symptoms of bearing too much for too long, both emotionally and physically. She was very, very devoted to her children. So that is not the Western view the fibromyalgia is the diagnosis, right? But what is really the underlying imbalance there? The diagnosis is the name that we give to the cluster of symptoms that have been previously identified and agreed upon by medical community. That's what a diagnosis is. That doesn't necessarily encompass the other element to it. And so we were able to work with her over a 6-month period. We're actually just finishing her treatment now, and she's been fibromyalgia attack free for 2 months now, which is before that would have been completely unheard of to have 2 completely flare-free months. So how did we get there? It's exactly what we just talked about. Not to oversimplify things, but it really is the same process, which is, I learned a lot about her so I could tailor something to her life. We started very, very small. It was maybe 10, 20 minutes of restorative therapeutic yoga-based practice. When she was too tired to do stuff, I told her to rest and said, please don't try to do practice, because that's what got you here in the first place, is trying to do too much when you're already taxed. So even just having that permission gave her the relief of, oh, I don't have to do this, right? And then within that relief, there's space to actually want to do more, ironically, right? So slowly over time, her body learned to trust her that she wouldn't push it to the point where it would need to fall into a collapse or an inflamed, flared up state for her to listen to herself. I need rest, or I need nourishment, or whatever it is, right? She started giving herself to that to herself within the structure of the personalized practice that I gave her. And we built that practice based on her Ayurvedic dosha and the cycles of life that she most resonates with naturally. So we shifted some things around in her schedule. And again, that freed up energy for her. So that way, going to practice no longer felt like a chore. It was just part of her flow in the day. Does that make sense? So then she's starting to hit, these beneficial practices and a better cycle within her day. And then those wings just keep stacking on each other. Yes, there were some things that came up during our treatment. She actually still had some really stressful incidences happen, but I was so proud of her because she was able to use her practices and buffer those to the point where she didn't have a fibromyalgia attack. That's huge, that's trained her resilience and her strength to not need to go there anymore. So that's what I'm saying. Like, the diagnosis, in my view, is just a label of the symptoms. We need to understand why the symptoms are there in the first place, right? Unless there was like some car crash where it's like, somebody ran into your arm. I also have those clients too, and that's a different kind of trauma. This is like, I'm rebuilding trust with my body. And now that trust is there, it's not attacking her anymore. And she can get her life back. She had weeks, months back in her days.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Especially with fibromyalgia, it's such a tricky one. There's such few answers in the medical community and so much trial and error. And of course, the work you're saying is also trial and error. But again, from that Western perspective, the trial and error often comes across like, you tried, you failed, it's your fault, therefore try again harder. And this is much more like, no, you tried and something went wrong somewhere. Let's figure it out. Could have been something you need to shift very slightly. Could have been something in your environment. It's always likely a combination of the two. So you're gentle and again, holding their hand, we don't get in our medical system. And it's such an important part.
100% resonating with you, vibing with you all the way. I really want to validate their inner voice, because that is what is going to lead them back to themselves. And we all have an internal witness, our own intuition telling us things. And I feel that if someone has chronic illness, this intuition is likely to be pretty strong. It might just be buried. And so this is an unearthing of that inner insight and a validation and a restoring of trust in that process as well too. Anytime there's a resistance, I really want my client to be open with me about it, because there's something that we can work with in that. If we work with the truth of what is, the truthiness of it all, then it just all comes into the light, And it's like, oh, you don't have to force yourself into a box. It's not working for you. this is a personalized practice. This isn't Missy, you know, this isn't Missy's way of being that is, you know, the supreme end all be all. It's like what works for you. And so throughout that process, my clients often tease out of themselves greater insight and awareness of what actually works for them. And my job is really just to listen and mirror that back to them and say, okay, it sounds like this worked really well for you, or you really liked this pose. Let's do more of that. What did you have challenges with? What did you know, what came up when you decided not to do practice? Oh, well, you know, my mat was in the garage and I didn't want to like take it out, or, you know, I was just so exhausted at the end of the day and I wanted to go out with friends. Okay, so evening's not a good time for you. Let's do like a 10-minute lunch break, you know. And it can change from day to day too. The point is just to be consistent with it, right? So, and then that helps them develop discipline, whether it's whatever your gender is, the self-discipline in that is what helps create that healing connected side to yourself. So anyway, yeah, I will cut myself off there. I can obviously soapbox about this all day.
No, I love it. It's perfect and it's necessary because again, like discipline, we have a very rigid view of that. Whereas in this practice, it's just about committing to yourself. And sometimes it will be in the morning and sometimes it'll be midday and sometimes it'll be at night. And so, yeah, something that my clients and I work on is understanding where their energies are. High energy, low energy throughout the day, or after you've eaten or not eaten, like how do you feel during those times? And then, you know, it's hard because most people, you know, especially if you're working a full-time job, you don't even have the opportunity to think about like when your energy is the best during the day, and it's probably taken up by your work. So there's just there's a lot that we work through to figure out how to make this work for you. I'm sure. Can you list some of the obstacles that maybe come up for you and your clients in that kind of way? Like things that are without, not in their control, but also could be eventually, like changing jobs or whatever. At first, that's a very like, that's, I can't just change my job. And maybe we work towards that. But yeah, are there any obstacles that you can think about?
I have a perfect client case study example to share with you about that. I had one client who came to me for an inflammation in his hip. He was a bartender, and it was very clear to me from listening to him, even in our first call, that he needed to get himself out of that environment. Bartending was no longer a good place for him to be. His life, his body, everything was like screaming for a change. Right? So it's just like, you know, when you're on the outside, it's a little more obvious. But when you're in it. And gosh, you're just totally in it, right? So, you know, I never told him, you need to change your job. We went through a practice of, okay, well, let's identify the things that may be inflaming to you in your life. What kinds of things are supportive for you to not feel inflamed in your life? You know, this is this person's livelihood and they've done this for years. So I'm not, you know, who am I to come in and be like, just quit your job? That'd be almost insulting. We don't have that kind of relationship yet. And I'm just a therapist, right? But he eventually did, and it happened in the way that was best for him because it was his choice and it was something that he came to his own realization to through the practices, right? And it happened in, you know, in a way of divine timing where it didn't leave him in a lurch at all. And it felt like something that was really an expansive choice for him and the obvious choice at that moment, because he had done all of the practices and, you know, months of working together to feel ready for that. And so I was so proud of him. And now he's started his own business and photography too, and he's getting ready to move. And he knows that he's very aware that the city in which he's living currently is not suited for him and the kind of people he wants to date and all this stuff. But that is light years beyond where we started. Right. So I never tell people how to live their lives. Right. I have my own set of beliefs and values and politics or whatever. But my job is not to impose those on other people. It's really to guide them back to their own insight And through that insight, the choices will become obvious. Another example is a client that he was an addict and, you know, had substance abuse issues and pretty severe and very deep in his addiction. And so when we first met, I said, you know, you don't come to sessions like this, but, you know, I'm not going to be another person in your life to tell you to just stop. Okay. I'm going to say that you can do what you want to do. But and if you follow these practices, the appeal of whatever emotional need you're getting met from using the substances is slowly going to die away. And it won't become as appealing to you anymore. And that's something that you're going to have to grapple with. I just laid it out for him straight. I was like, but your other choices and doing these practices will become more appealing because you'll feel that the actual need that you're trying to get met through these other activities is being more substantially nourished in a deeper way that's actually real for you. And that's something that you cannot control of, whereas these other substances, it's just going to be temporary always. You're always going to need more. And that's why you're in this cycle. There's an endless supply of practices here for you, but you have to choose them. It always goes back to choice. So that was years ago. So this has been a long journey for him. That was 6 years ago. And so he's gone through several relapses, but now he's several months post rehab treatment, doing really well, playing golf, hanging out with his friends, filming documentaries. You know, it's still a journey and he's still going through it. But again, it's like all I can do is offer, and it's up to them if they want to accept the invitation. And a lot of times the desire is there, but when they're presented with the question like this, it's like they know these other things have to fall away. And so that process needs time, right? And so they'll come to it in their own time. I think it's a violation for me as a trauma-informed practitioner to try to enforce my own timing onto their situation. All I can do is hold the container. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's how I practice as well. And it's hard as there are a lot of mental health therapists that listen to this podcast. So just normalizing for a second how hard it is to be in that role and how much work it takes personally to be able to hold space and not have a desired outcome without feeling like it's your fault or you're doing something wrong. And then we can easily project that onto the client that they're doing something wrong. So it's such a intense practice for everyone involved, the client, the practitioner, and we make commitments to each other. But the commitments are, I'm going to show up and do everything that I am supposed to do. And you're going to show up and do everything you're supposed to do. And those two things are independent of each other. If you start to show up and you're not doing what you're supposed to do, I'm still going to do what I'm supposed to do in this relationship for you, but I won't do anything more and I won't do anything less. So I'm not going to resent you, the client, for showing up and not holding your commitments. But I'm also not going to overreach and start to do more in an effort to save or fix. I'm going to stay centered in my own practice and do exactly what I'm supposed to do.
100%. Yes. Yes. And I also want to apologize to anybody listening. If you have felt responsible for that in the past or like there's something wrong with you just because you didn't get it in the way that your provider explained it, that just maybe not the right provider for you, or you just, you know, maybe it will take both times. To echo your thoughts, I've had to slow myself down. I mean, my clients are just amazing. I have so much admiration for them. I was working with a very intelligent client, a very successful man. And to speak to this point, you know, he was an NFL football player. He had a successful firm, you know, like all the bells and whistles of life, right? And I was like, okay, this person has a pretty good grip. Like, we can, you know, go at a, you know, pretty good pace here. And I had to slow myself down and check my ego because it was very clear from, you know, doing a few practices, even just basic breath work, where it's like, oh, he needs this broken down. And I felt him get frustrated and asking questions of me to explain what was going on more, because I could feel like he felt like he should have gotten it already. And I also felt like he should have gotten it already. So That was my fault. I took responsibility for that. I said, look, you know, I clearly need to explain this in a different way to you. So let me slow my role here and we'll just start over from the beginning. Let's take a deep breath and we'll start this over. I'm going to break it down even smaller steps here. You know, the progression can still stay the same, but how we climb the ladder can be a multitude of ways. So if it still feels like too much too fast, we just got to break it down to even smaller steps. So that's no, your providers should be meeting you, ideally. And if they refuse to or don't see that in you, then, you know, maybe they're not the best, or maybe they also need to be held in your own processes, which is why I have my own therapist and each, you know, whole village and entrepreneurs too.
Yeah, it's so important that we're doing our own work for that very reason. So much can come up and that you're not even, you don't even anticipate will come up. And yeah, sometimes it's, you know, that, and other times it's just even a goodness of fit, you know, that your personality and my personality, we could work really hard to make it work, or we could refer you to somebody who has a better match for your personality, so that the work is easier. Cause that's really, and I did hear you talk about that concept and titration, and we want to ease into this work. Otherwise, we just fall back into the all or nothing, crash, burn, go, crash, burn, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That's such a deep pattern in a chronic illness community. So I just, you know, again, I want to leave you with personalized practice. Having, it's not that yoga, massage, whatever, holistic healthcare, self-care is going to completely eliminate the waves. We don't, that's not the goal. The goal is to be able to ride those cycles without, like you said, crashing and burning on the low end or going too high up into mania and then crashing and burning afterward. We want to keep some reserve in the tank, especially for chronic illness and chronic pain patients or clients, so that you can meet the demands of your everyday life and have some leftover, right? We don't want to be operating at 100% all the time. Neither do we want to be operating at 10% all the time. The sweet spot where I say to live is about 30 to 70%. So if we can modulate the intensity of our practices, exercises, the amount of stress that we're taking on, you know, if that whole 70% is taken up by work and there's only 1% left for practice, that's what we got to work with, right? So there's a real radical honesty on the part of both the client and the therapist or the provider in the relationship to just work with what is. That being said, over time, this will build your resilience. It will build your capacity. You don't have to live in chronic pain forever. And any combination of Western and Eastern modalities that works uniquely for you is going to be the best solution for you. So I really want people to feel empowered to seek that out for themselves. You are your own self-authority on your experience.
Yeah, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to share that we didn't quite share today?
I would just say if anyone wants to connect with me, they're more than welcome to reach out. I have a YouTube channel, The Body Intuitive, where I go more into, you know, my coaching on sovereign sexuality and healing the male trauma cycle and mobility rehab, all the things. I also have Instagram, The Body Intuitive. Check out that 5 steps to start your personalized practice guidebook. And then there's an email at the end too, also an offer for a free consult if anyone wants me to give them personalized insights on how they can adapt a practice for themselves into their own life. So I'm more than welcome to take me up on that offer. But I really just have to say thank you so much, Destiny, for welcoming me onto your podcast. And yeah, it sounds like we're just really aligned in the way that we approach and work with our clients. And I think that takes a really rare and special kind of provider to be able to work up to that level, because there's just not a lot of that out there, to be honest with you. So congratulations as well on all you're accomplished, and your students are very lucky to have you. I call them students, sorry, clients.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And same back to you. You've obviously have a ton of discipline as well, and can easily, it looks like you can flow into, you can go back and forth between rigidity and flow, and that's such a hard practice. So thank you for all of the information you put out there for free and the work that you're doing as well in this community.
Thanks, girl. Well, I hope you all have a great day. Enjoy the rest of this. And just remember that practice is always for you, not for anybody else, right?
Yes, for you and no one else. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you learned something new today, consider writing it down in your phone notes or journal and make that new neural pathway light up. Better yet, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a DM on Instagram, email me, or leave a voice memo for us to play on the next show. The way you summarize your takeaways can be the perfect little soundbite that someone else might need. And lastly, leaving a review really helps others find this podcast, so please do if you found this episode helpful. And P.S., clicking subscribe ensures you'll be here for the next episode. See you then.